Hi, I'm Doug Gorton. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Imagine that you're a 12-year-old wandering through an unknown Milwaukee neighborhood, selling newspaper subscriptions on a cold winter evening in 1987. Dan Coyce doesn't have to imagine that. He lived through this experience, and it made such an impression on him that he wrote a frightening and funny novel about it. It's called Hampton Heights, One Harrowing Night in the Most Haunted Neighborhood in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Six young paperboys are the vivid main characters, selling subscriptions door-to-door on a night they will soon wish they could forget. During their travels, they come up against werewolves, witches, and an ancient monster whose diet consists of memories. And of course, we can't forget the Hodag, that prehistoric fur-bearing lizard-esque creature that inhabits the wilds of northern Wisconsin.
Oh, wrong monster. Let's see, Hodag. Here we are.
Beware the Hodag.
Hampton Heights is a working-class neighborhood on the northwest side of Milwaukee. In the 80s, the sort of old-world population that had first settled it in the 1800s, the Scandinavian and German population, was starting really to die off and to move out, and a new population of middle-class and working-class Black residents who had moved out of the, you know, the Black neighborhoods of Milwaukee, like Bronzeville, that were bulldozed in the 50s and 60s, were starting to move in and take advantage of the factory jobs in that part of town. But at the same time, the factories were closing. The Hampton Heights in particular endured a couple of big factory closings in the 80s that also transformed the neighborhood. So I wanted a neighborhood that was caught between the old world and the new, because I wanted to populate it with monsters, and I wanted those monsters to represent both the old world and the new.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. Thank you for that. And I want you to tell us the premise of what happens in the early part of Hampton Heights, because it's something, it's a real-life experience that you actually had.
So Hampton Heights is the story of six middle school paperboys in 1987, who live around the east side and in Harambee in Milwaukee. They're all taken out in a van by their stupid manager, Kevin, to sell Milwaukee Sentinel subscriptions in a neighborhood chosen randomly, in this case, Hampton Heights. They're set loose on the streets in pairs. They're told to sell as many subscriptions as they can. Whoever sells the most gets $20. And when it's all over, they all get to go to Burger King. While they're there, they do try to sell these subscriptions, but they also discover that they have been inadvertently dropped into Milwaukee's most haunted neighborhood. And each pair of boys, as well as their stupid manager, Kevin, will have to encounter and overcome certain supernatural creatures. I did have an experience similar to this, though without the supernatural creatures. Though when I was 12, I might as well have met witches and trolls and werewolves and vampires, you know? I also was a Milwaukee Sentinel paperboy when I was growing up. It was my first job. And our manager would also drive us in a horrible white van to some random neighborhood in Milwaukee, throw us out on the streets, and be like, see you in 2 hours. At the time, it was sort of the most unusual and disconcerting experience I'd ever had. I was a very sheltered kid. I was sheltered even maybe by the standards of 1980s kids. You know, obviously I had no connection to the outside world. There's no such thing as the internet. But even beyond that, I barely knew what was going on outside my block. Like, that was my whole world. And so to be dropped in this totally different neighborhood, a different neighborhood each time, without really any idea even of where I was in Milwaukee, was a very unusual experience. And I wanted to reflect how unusual it was and heighten it for an adult reader in the year 2024 by adding a lot of monsters.
Mm-hmm. Mission accomplished. You did it very well. How much of the Hampton Heights neighborhood is real, and how much of it comes from your very vivid imagination?
The streets are real. The houses are as real as I could garner from Google Street View and from driving around the neighborhood. The little stream that runs through the neighborhood is real. That stream runs about 2 blocks south of Hampton, east-west. And eventually flows into the Milwaukee River. The demographics are real, you know, thanks to a group of local Milwaukee historians and anthropologists who've put together a really great Milwaukee neighborhood guide that's online. They have used property records to really track the demographics of a lot of different Milwaukee neighborhoods over time. And so I know that the demographics of the neighborhood are basically correct, that it was more or less almost exactly 50-50 split between, you know, fourth or fifth generation immigrant families and Black families that had moved in within the past decade. What I imagined was not only the monsters, but also I imagined the kind of delicate but real peace and comedy between those two populations that I imagined endured during that time, which comes from other neighborhoods I've lived in my life that are in those sort of similar moments of transition, moments that sometimes can create real strife, can create real resentment between populations, can even create violence, but in other circumstances, create a kind of like banding together and a comprehension that for all these populations' differences and for all the real tensions between them, they're in the same boat. And the real enemy is the corporations, the factories that are closing, the people who are trying to keep those middle class or working class people down.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of these great characters that you have created. The boys work in pairs, and one of my favorite character pairings is Simone and Joel. Can you tell us about Simone?
Simone is a kid who lives in Harambee in the city of Milwaukee proper. Like many kids in the 80s and 90s, he's a Chapter 220 kid. He's bused to school out in the suburbs, basically identified as Whitefish Bay, which is the suburb that I grew up in. And he is paired up with a white kid who goes to his school, and not just any white kid, but a very wealthy white kid who lives on Lake Drive in a mansion, who, you know, brags about the cars that his father drives, who brings a gigantic, expensive CD boombox along with him on this canvassing trip, and who idolizes Black culture. And so I wanted to write about these two characters, a kid like Simone, who is trying to figure out what kind of man he might become and what Milwaukee as a city might offer to him as a grown person, and who's dealing with these very, very, this hard dichotomy between Black and white, and to plop him into a neighborhood where that dichotomy is a little messier and where those populations mix and interact in very different ways than they do in his school, and where in a supernatural fashion, his origins really come into play in a way he never expected. And he's doing it all while also dealing with this kid who in many ways idolizes him, but also doesn't understand him at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. And you've said that it reminded Simone, when the white kids asked Simone to join their act, it reminded him of how the kids who barely even looked at him in class got real interested once it was time to pick teams in recess. And I thought that was a very good detail and that you put in the book.
I was certainly as clueless as those boys in those days. And one reason to write fiction that touches on some moment in your own life, even if you're twisting it and changing it and transforming it in a lot of ways, is to try to think through the stuff you didn't understand then and force your characters into a kind of understanding about the world that maybe you took a lot longer to attain. I find that really valuable as a writer and as a person. And so I really wanted to think hard and imagine as well as I could what the perspective of a kid who was coming into that environment would be when faced with a kid, not exactly like me, but not unlike me.
Right. Yeah, very well said. These kids are dealing with witches, trolls, werewolves, and hodags. How do the kids react to these creatures?
They react, I mean, often in terror, but they're also kids who, in many cases, have watched a lot of horror movies, read a lot of Stephen King, and view these monsters they encounter as bigger and weirder challenges than the challenges they usually face, but not truly unique. They're still in scrapes that they feel they can think, talk, or act their way out of. And part of the fun of the book, I think, is watching each of these pairs of kids find the reserves inside themselves to help them overcome or survive these scrapes they get into. And so for a kid that age, I just really think there isn't that, when you're dropped into a situation like this, it's not, it maybe wouldn't be that surprising if all of a sudden there's a werewolf down the street. Like, why wouldn't there be?
Yeah.
You're already in a totally weird neighborhood that you've never been in. How would you not believe that there wouldn't be werewolves in Hampton Heights? And so I wanted to show these kids being surprised and frightened, but also feeling like, oh, I wonder how I can get out of this one. In the same way they would think, oh, I wonder how I can get out of my principal caught me skipping school, or the big kids from the high school caught me throwing water balloons at their car, or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good point. I never thought of it that way. Ryan and Mark, in my mind, Ryan and Mark, they have the most surreal experience out of all of the Paperboys. This seems like a fairy tale compared to the early chapters. It kind of reminded me of Kelly Link's work. Can you tell us about their experience without giving away any or too many spoilers?
Well, you're exactly right in that I was reading a lot of Kelly Link while I wrote this chapter, and I was thinking, can I do that? And I the answer is I can do a worse version of it, but sure, I can sort of do it. So Mark and Ryan both are North Shore kids, suburban kids. Ryan is figuring out his sexuality. Mark goes on the trip because he has a crush on a girl who works at the Burger King that they're intending to go to, but they really bond. They become compadres, like, instantly, basically because they both like Monty Python and Weird Al Yankovic. And so their bond is the closest from the get-go. The beginning of the chapter really focuses on them. But at some point, I wanted to explore what happened in a story like this if you essentially take the story away from the main characters, from the boys who are the heroes, who are always at the center of stories like this. I wanted to pluck the story away from them and give it to the characters who in a story like this are often the villains, the witches. In a fairy tale version of this, the witches would trap them, harm them, cook them, eat them, torture them in some way. But I wanted to write a story in which that wasn't the witches' goal. The witches' goal was something a little more benign, and that might even help the boys down the line, even if the witches are taking liberties with the boys' bodies and spirits in ways that they maybe wouldn't be comfortable with if they had a choice. And I like the idea of handing the story over wholesale to these two other characters, creating this fairy tale world, and giving the book as a whole this sort of broader sense of the sweep of centuries that is at play in a kind of fantastical, supernatural environment like this. These boys are only here for one night, but the creatures who are here in this neighborhood have lives and existences that have gone on forever and might still go on forever. And the boys themselves might have a role to play in that. I guess that's, I'm not really spoiling. Perhaps I'm being a little too cagey. That was the fairy tale spirit of that section.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And cagey is good in this particular context, I think. You have said that as you were writing Hampton Heights, you started thinking of it as gentle horror. How so?
I didn't want anyone to think the kids were going to die. Like this, you know, I'm as I said, I'm cagey about spoiling what happens in individual stories, but I love making sure everyone knows before they start this book that at the end of the book, the kids are fine and they go to Burger King. That's important to me. You know, part of it is because I'm a parent, and as happens with many parents, though not all, basically the instant I had kids, I immediately lost all taste for any story in which a kid dies. Like, that makes such stories radioactive, basically, as far as I'm concerned. But also, I liked the idea of a story in which the kids are in peril in some way, and they face challenges. But what you're going through as a reader is not the kind of prototypical horror experience of waiting for the author to punish them in some unique, shocking, surprising, or delightful way. That, you know, that is a real pleasure that horror offers, the good, terrifying horror can offer. You never know if a character is going to die, and you never know the unbelievable, unique, creative, twisted way that the character is going to die. I wanted the sort of unbelievable creativity in this book to come out of the ways the kids find to escape these experiences, the innovation and ingenuity that they show in growing up over the course of this night to becoming the kinds of kids who can get out of circumstances like this. And so it was important to me to always sort of give off the vibe in the book that whatever happens, these kids are going to make it through and they're not going to suffer too badly. Now, adults, who knows? Adults might be fair game. Sorry to their manager, Kevin. You never know what's going to happen to that guy. But the kids are going to get their burgers.
That's great. That's important that they get their burgers. So it ends on a very happy note. Dan Coyes, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Hampton Heights. I loved reading it. Looking forward to your next book.
Thank you so much.
Dan Coyes is the author of Hampton Heights, One Harrowing Night in the Most Haunted Neighborhood in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Find out more about Dan and his novel at WPR.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Nick Lowe, Emily St. James, Noel Murray, and Dan Coyes.
What you're gleaning from these interviews is groundbreaking.
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or share it with new alphas. You can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
It was created for WPR by yours truly and Adam Friedrich.
Sorry, dude, but you're a duffer like me.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
There's a certain gargantuan quality about this.
Our executive producer is Brad Colbert.
You've got no idea who you're talking to.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
Well, well, well. Thank the bell of the ball.